Star Wars, Dark Force Rising, by Timothy Zahn, continued. Cassette number 8, side 1. Perhaps some part of the campaign against the New Republic had gone sour, requiring his attention elsewhere. Or perhaps he'd simply gone off on some short errand, intending to be back in a day or two. Either way, it meant that the time to strike was now, if they could only find something to strike at. Beside her, Chewbacca growled a suggestion. "We can't do that," Leia shook her head. "It'd be no better than a full-blown attack on the spaceport. We have to keep damage to Unstow and its people to an absolute minimum." The Wookiee snarled impatiently. "I don't know what else to do," she snapped back. "All I know is that death and massive destruction won't do anything but put us back where we were before we came here. It certainly won't convince the Nogri that they should leave the Empire and come over to our side." She looked out past the cluster of huts at the distant hills and the brown colm grass rippling in the breeze. Glinting in the sunlight, the squat box shapes of a dozen decon droids were hard at work, scooping up a quarter cubic meter of topsoil with each bite, running it through some exotic catalytic magic in their interiors, and dumping the cleansed product out the back. Slowly but steadily bringing the people of Honor back from the edge of the destruction they'd faced. And a highly visible reminder, if anyone needed it, of the Empire's benevolence toward them. "Lady Vader," a gravelly voice mewed from just behind her. Leia jumped. "Good morning, Maitrach," she said, turning and giving the Nogri a solemn nod. "I trust you are well this morning."
"I feel no sickness," the other said shortly.
"Good," Leia said, the word sounding rather lame. The Maitrach hadn't been so impolite as to say anything out loud, but it was clear enough that she considered herself to be in a no-win situation here, with dishonor and perhaps even death waiting for her family, as soon as the Grand Admiral discovered what Kabarak had done. It was probably only a matter of time, Leia knew, before she came to the conclusion that turning the intruders over to the Empire herself would be the least disastrous course still open to her.
"Your plans," the Maitrach said. "How do they go?"
Leia glanced at Chewbacca.
"We're making progress," she said.
It was true enough, after a fashion. The elimination of every approach they'd come up with did technically qualify as progress.
"We still have a long way to go, though."
"Yes," the Maitrach said. She looked out past the buildings.
"Your droid has spent much time with the other machines."
"There isn't as much here for him to do as I'd thought there would be," Leia said. "You and many of your people speak basic better than I'd anticipated."
"The Grand Admiral has taught us well."
"As did my father, the Lord Darth Vader, before him," Leia reminded her. The Maitrach was silent a moment.
"Yes," she conceded reluctantly.
Leia felt a chill run up her back. The first step in a betrayal would be to put emotional distance between the Nogri and their former lord.
"That area will be finished soon," the Maitrach said, pointing to the laboring decon droids. "If they finish within the next 10 days, we will be able to plant there this season."
"Will the extra land be enough to make you self-sufficient?" Leia asked.
"It will help, but not enough."
Leia nodded, feeling a fresh surge of frustration. To her, the Empire scheme was as blatant as it was cynical. With careful tuning of the whole decontamination process, they could keep the Nogri on the verge of independence indefinitely, without ever letting them quite make it over that line. She knew it. The Maitrach herself suspected it. But as for proving it...
Chewie, are you familiar at all with decondroids? She asked suddenly. This thought had occurred to her once before, but she'd never gotten around to following up on it. Enough that you could figure out how long it would take the number of droids they have on Honor to decontaminate this much land? The Wookiee growled an affirmative and launched into a rundown of the relevant numbers. Clearly, the question had occurred to him, too. I don't need the complete analysis right now, Leia interrupted the stream of estimates and extrapolations and rules of thumb. Have you got a bottom line? He did. 8 years. I see, Leia murmured, the brief flicker of hope fading back into the overall gloom. That would have put it right about the height of the war, wouldn't it? You still believe the Grand Admiral has deceived us? The Matriarch accused. I know he's deceiving you, Leia retorted. I just can't prove it. The Matriarch was silent for a minute. What then will you do? Leia took a deep breath, exhaled it quietly. We have to leave Honor. That means breaking into the spaceport at N'Stau and stealing a ship. There should be no difficulty in that for a daughter of the Lord Darth Vader. Leia grimaced, thinking of how the Matriarch had effortlessly sneaked up on them a minute ago. The guards at the spaceport would be younger and far better trained. These people must have been fantastic hunters before the Emperor turned them into his private killing machines. Stealing a ship won't be too hard, she told the Matriarch, aware of just how far she was stretching the truth here. The difficulty arises from the fact that we have to take Kabarak with us. The Matriarch stopped short. What is that you say? She hissed. It's the only way, Leia said. If Kabarak is left to the Empire, they'll make him tell everything that's occurred here. And when that happens, he and you will both die. Perhaps your whole family with you. We can't allow that. Then you face death yourselves, the Matriarch said. The guards will not easily allow Kabarak to be freed. I know, Leia said, acutely aware of the two small lives she carried within her. We'll have to take that risk. There will be no honor in such a sacrifice, the old Nogri all but snarled. The clan Kimbar will not carve it into history. Neither will the Nogri people long remember. I'm not doing it for the praise of the Nogri people, Leia sighed, suddenly weary of banging her head against alien misunderstandings. She'd been doing it in one form or another, it seemed, for the whole of her life. I'm doing it because I'm tired of people dying for my mistakes. I asked Kabarak to bring me to Honor. What's happened is my responsibility. I can't just run off and leave you to the Grand Admiral's vengeance. Our Lord the Grand Admiral would not deal so harshly with us. Leia turned to look the Matriarch straight in the eye. The Empire once destroyed an entire world because of me, she said quietly. I don't ever want that to happen again. She held the Matriarch's gaze a moment longer, then turned away. Her mind twisted in a tangle of conflicting thoughts and emotions. Was she doing the right thing? She'd risked her life countless times before, but always for her comrades in the rebellion, and for a cause she believed in. To do the same for servants of the Empire, even servants who'd been duped into that role, was something else entirely. Chewbacca didn't like any of this. She could tell that much from his sense and the stiff way he stood at her side. But he would go along, driven by his own sense of honor and the life debt he had sworn to Han. She blinked back sudden tears, her hand going to the bulge of her belly. Hen would understand. He would argue against such a risk, but down deep he would understand. Otherwise, he wouldn't have let her come here in the first place. If she didn't return, he would almost certainly blame himself. The humiliation period has been extended for 4 more days, the Matrok murmured beside her. In 2 days' time, the moons will give their least light. It would be best to wait until then. Leia frowned at her. The Matrok met her gaze steadily, her alien face unreadable.
Are you offering me your help? Leia asked.
There is honor in you, Lady Vader, the Matrok said, her voice quiet. For the life and honor of my third son, I will go with you. Perhaps we will die together. Leia nodded, her heart aching.
Perhaps we will.
But she wouldn't. The Matrok and Kabarak might die, and probably Chewbacca beside them. But not her. The Lady Vader they would take alive and save as a gift for their lord, the Grand Admiral, who would smile and speak politely and take her children away from her. She looked out at the fields, wishing Han were here, and wondered if he would ever know what had happened to her. Come, the Matrok said. Let us return to the house. There are many things about Nsnau which you must yet learn.
I'm glad you finally called, Winter's voice came over the Lady Luck speaker, distorted slightly by a not-quite-attuned scrambler package. I was starting to worry.
We're okay. We just had to run silent a while, Han assured her. You got trouble back there?
No more than when you left, she said. The Imperials are still hitting our shipping out there, and no one's figured out what to do about it. Felia is trying to persuade the Council that he could do a better job of defense than Akbar's people, but so far Mon Mothma hasn't taken him up on the offer. I get the feeling that some of the Council members are starting to have second thoughts about his motivations for all of this.
Good, Han growled. Maybe they'll tell him to shut up and put Akbar back in command.
Unfortunately, Felia's still got too much support to ignore completely, Winter said, particularly among the military.
Yeah. Han braced himself. I don't suppose you've heard from Leia.
Not yet, Winter said,
and Han could hear the underlying tension in her voice. She was worried, too.
But I did hear from Luke. That's why I wanted to get in touch with you, in fact.
Is he in trouble?
I don't know. The message didn't say. He wants you to rendezvous with him on New Cove.
New Cove? Han frowned down at the cloud-speckled planet turning beneath them. Why?
The message didn't say. Just that he'd meet you at the, quote, money-changing center, unquote.
The... Han shifted his frown to Lando. What's that supposed to mean? He's talking about the Mishra Tap Cafe in Ilik, where he and I met while you were following Brelia, Lando said. Private joke. I'll fill you in later.
So that means there's no question Luke sent the message?
Winter asked. Wait a minute, Han put in as Lando started to answer. Didn't you talk to him personally?
No, the message came in printed, Winter said. Not on any scrambler, either.
He doesn't have a scrambler on his X-Wing, does he? Lando asked.
No, but he could get a message coded at any New Republic diplomatic post, Han said slowly.
Is this private joke something only you two would know about?
Us two, plus maybe 100 bystanders, Lando conceded. You think it's a trap?
Could be. Okay, Winter, thanks. We'll be checking in more often from now on.
All right. Be careful.
You bet. He signed off and looked at Lando.
It's your ship, pal. You want to go down and take a look, or give it a miss and go check out this swimming casino of yours?
Lando hissed a breath between his teeth. I don't think we've got much choice, he said. If the message was from Luke, it's probably important.
And if it wasn't?
Lando favored him with a tight grin. Hey, we've run Imperial traps before. Come on, let's take her down.
After the way they'd blasted out of Illik a few days earlier, it was doubtful the local authorities would be especially overjoyed to see the return of the Lady Luck to their city. Fortunately, he'd put the past 2 days' worth of leisure time to good use, and as they sat down inside the domed landing area, the spaceport computer dutifully logged the arrival of the pleasure yacht, Tamar's Folly.
It's just terrific to be back, Anne commented dryly, as he and Lando started down the ramp. Probably ought to snoop around a little before we head down to the Mishra.
Beside him, Lando stiffened.
I don't think we're going to have to bother with the Mishra, he said quietly.
Han threw a quick glance at him, dropping his hand casually to his blaster as he shifted his gaze to where Lando was looking. Standing 5 meters from the end of the Lady Luck's ramp was a bulky man in an ornate tunic, chewing on the end of a cigar and smiling with sly innocence up at them.
Friend of yours? Han murmured.
I wouldn't go that far, Lando murmured back. Name's Niles Ferrier, ship thief and occasional smuggler.
He was in on the Mishra thing, I take it.
One of the key players, actually.
Han nodded, letting his eyes drift around the spaceport. Among the dozens of people moving briskly about their business, he spotted 3 or 4 who seemed to be loitering nearby.
Ship thief, huh?
Yes, but he's not going to bother with anything as small as the Lady Luck, Lando assured him.
Han grunted. Watch him anyway.
You bet.
They reached the foot of the ramp, and by unspoken but mutual consent, stopped there and waited. Ferrier's grin broadened a bit, and he sauntered forward to meet them.
Hello there, Calrissian, he said. We keep bumping into each other, don't we?
Hello, Luke, Han spoke up before Lando could reply. You've changed.
Ferrier's smile turned almost sheepish.
Yeah, sorry about that. I didn't figure you'd come if I put my own name on the message.
Where's Luke? Han demanded.
Search me, Ferrier shrugged. He burned out of here same time you did. That was the last I saw of him.
Han studied his face, looking for a lie. He didn't see one.
What do you want?
I want to cut a deal with the New Republic, Ferrier said, lowering his voice. A deal for some new warships. You interested?
Han felt a tingle at the back of his neck.
We might be, he said, trying to sound casual. What kind of ships are we talking about?
Ferrier gestured to the ramp.
How about we talk in the ship?
How about we talk out here? Lando retorted.
Ferrier seemed taken aback.
Take it easy, Calrissian, he said soothingly. What do you think I'm going to do? Walk off with your ship in my pocket?
What kind of ships? Han repeated.
Ferrier looked at him for a moment, then made a show of glancing around the area.
Big ones, he said, lowering his voice. Dreadnought class.
He lowered his voice still further.
The Catena fleet.
With an effort, Han kept his sabacc face in place.
The Catena fleet, right.
I'm not kidding, Ferrier insisted. The Katana's been found, and I've got a line on the guy who found it.
Yeah, Han said.
Something in Ferrier's face. He turned around quickly
half expecting to see someone trying to sneak up over the edge of the ramp into the Lady Luck. But aside from the usual mix of shadows from the spaceport lights, there was nothing there.
Something? Lando demanded.
No, Han said, turning back to Ferrier. If the thief really did have a line on Bel Iblis's supplier, it could save them a lot of time. But if he had nothing but rumors, and was maybe hoping to wangle something a little more solid.
What makes you think this guy has anything? He demanded.
Ferrier smiled slyly.
Free information, Solo? Come on, you know better than that.
All right, then, Lando said. What do you want from us, and what are you offering in trade?
I know the guy's name, Ferrier said, his face turning serious again. But I don't know where he is. I thought we could pool our resources, see if we can get to him before the Empire does.
Han felt his throat tighten. What makes you think the Empire's involved?
Ferrier threw him a scornful look. With Grand Admiral Thrawn in charge over there, he's involved in everything.
Han smiled lopsidedly. At last, they had a name to go with the uniform.
Thrawn, huh? Thanks, Ferrier.
Ferrier's face went rigid as he suddenly realized what he'd just given away.
No charge, he said between stiff lips.
We still haven't heard what we're getting out of the deal, Lando reminded him.
Do you know where he is? Ferrier asked.
We have a lead, Lando said. What are you offering?
Ferrier shifted a measuring gaze back and forth between them.
I'll give you half the ships we take out, he said at last, plus an option for the New Republic to buy out the rest at a reasonable price.
What's a reasonable price? Anne asked.
Depends on what kind of shape they're in, Ferrier countered. I'm sure we'll be able to come to an agreement.
Han looked at Lando. What do you think?
Forget it, Lando said, his voice hard. You want to give us the name? Fine. If it checks out, we'll make sure you're well paid once we've got the ships. Otherwise, shove off.
Ferrier drew back.
Well, fine, he said, sounding more hurt than annoyed. You want to do it all by yourselves, be my guest. But if we get to the ships first, your precious little New Republic's going to pay a lot more to get them. A lot more.
Spinning around, he stalked off.
Come on, Han, let's get out of here, Lando muttered, his eyes on Ferrier's retreating back.
Yeah, Han said, looking around for the loiterers he'd spotted earlier.
They, too, were drifting away. It didn't look like trouble, but he kept his hand on his blaster anyway until they were inside the Lady Luck with the hatch sealed.
I'll prep for lift, Lando said as they headed back to the cockpit. You talk to control. Get us an exit slot.
Okay, Han said. You know, with a little more bargaining...
I don't trust him, Lando cut him off, running his hand over the startup switches. He was smiling too much, and he gave up too easily.
It was a hard comment to argue against, and as Han had noted earlier, it was Lando's ship. Shrugging to himself, he keyed for spaceport control. They were out in 10 minutes, once again leaving an unhappy group of controllers behind them.
I hope this is the last time we have to come here, Han said, scowling across the cockpit at Lando. I get the feeling we've worn out our welcome.
Lando threw him a sideways glance.
Well, well, since when did you start caring what other people thought about you?
Since I married a princess and started carrying a government ID, Han growled back. Anyway, I thought you were supposed to be respectable, too.
It comes and goes.
Aha!
He smiled humorlessly at Han. It looks like while we were talking to Ferrier, someone sneaked up and put something on our hull. Ten'll get you one. It's a homing beacon.
What a surprise, Han said, keying his display for its location. It was on the rear lower hull, back near the ramp, where it would be out of most of the liftoff turbulence.
What do you want to do with it?
The Tarijo system's more or less on the way to Pantalomen, Lando said, consulting his display. We'll swing through there and drop it off.
Okay.
Han scowled at his display. Too bad we can't put it on another ship right here. That way he wouldn't even know what direction we're going.
Lando shook his head. He'll know we've spotted it if we put down on New Cove now. Unless you want to take it off up here and try to toss it onto another passing ship.
He glanced at Han, paused for a longer look. We're not going to try it, Han, he said firmly. Get that look out of your eye.
Oh, all right, Han grumbled. That'd get him off our backs, though.
And might get you killed in the process, Lando retorted. And then I'd have to go back and explain it to Leia. Forget it.
Han gritted his teeth.
Leia.
Yeah, he said with a sigh.
Lando looked at him again. Come on, buddy, relax. Ferrier hasn't got a hope of beating us. Trust me, we're going to win this one.
Han nodded. He hadn't been thinking about Ferrier, actually, or about the Katana fleet.
I know, he said.
The Lady Luck disappeared smoothly through one of the ducts in the Transpara steel dome, and Ferrier shifted his cigar to the other side of his mouth.
You're sure they won't find the second beacon? He asked.
Beside him, the oddly shaped shadow between a pile of shipping crates stirred.
They will not, it said, in a voice like cold running water.
You'd better be right, Ferrier warned, a note of menace in his voice. I didn't stand there and take that garbage from them for nothing.
He glared at the shadow.
As it was, you almost gave the game away, he said accusingly. Solo looked straight back at you once.
There was no danger, the Wraith said flatly. Humans need movement to see. Not moving shadows are of no concern.
Well, it worked this time, Ferrier was willing to concede. You're still lucky it was Solo and not Calrissian who looked. He saw you once before, you know. Next time, keep your big feet quiet.
The Wraith said nothing.
Oh, go on, get back to the ship, Ferrier ordered. Tell Abrik to get her ready to lift. We've got ourselves a fortune to make.
He threw a last look upward.
And maybe, he added with grim satisfaction, a smart-mouthed gambler to take out.
Chapter 19. The etherway was clearly visible now, dropping like a misshapen rock out of the sky toward its assigned landing pit. Standing in the protective shadow of the exit tunnel, Carda watched its approach, stroking the grip of his blaster gently with his fingertips and trying to ignore the uneasiness still tickling the back of his mind. Mara was over 3 days late in bringing the freighter back from Abrigado. Not a particularly significant delay under normal conditions, but this trip had hardly qualified as normal. But there had been no other ships on her tail as she entered orbit, and she'd transmitted all the proper, all-clear code signals to him as she dropped into the approach pattern. And aside from the incompetence of the controllers, who'd taken an inordinate amount of time to decide which pit she was actually being assigned to, the landing itself had so far been completely routine. Carda smiled wryly as he watched the ship come down.
There had been times in the past 3 days when he'd thought about Mara's hatred of Luke Skywalker and had wondered if she had decided to drop out of his life as mysteriously as she'd dropped into it. But it seemed now that his original reading of her had been correct. Mara Jade wasn't the sort of person who gave her loyalty easily, but once she'd made a decision, she stuck with it. If she ever ran out on him, she wouldn't do so in a stolen ship. Not stolen from him, anyway. The Aetherway was on its final approach now, rotating on its repulsor lips to orient its hatchway toward the exit tunnel. Obviously, Carda's reading of Han Solo had been correct, too. Even if the other hadn't been quite gullible enough to send a Mon Cal Star Cruiser out to Mirker, he'd at least kept his promise to get the Aetherway out of impoundment. Apparently, all of Carda's private worrying of the past 3 days had been for nothing. But the uneasiness was still there. With a hiss of back release outgassing, the Aetherway settled to the stress cord paving of the landing pit. His eyes on the closed hatchway, Carda pulled his comlink from his belt and thumbed for his backup spotter.
Duncan, anything suspicious in sight?
Not a thing, the other's voice came back promptly. Looks very quiet over there.
Carda nodded. All right. Keep out of sight, but stay alert.
He replaced the comlink in his belt. The Aetherway's landing ramp began to swing down, and he shifted his hand to a grip on his blaster. If this was a trap, now would be the likely time to spring it. The hatchway opened, and Mara appeared. She glanced around the pit as she started down the ramp, spotting him immediately in his chosen shadow.
Carda? She called.
Welcome home, Mara, he said, stepping out into the light. You're a bit late.
I wound up making a little detour, she said grimly, coming toward him.
That can happen, he said, frowning.
Her attention was still flitting around the pit, her face lined with a vague sort of tension.
Trouble? He asked quietly.
I don't know, she murmured. I feel...
She never finished the sentence. At Carda's belt, his comlink suddenly squawked, screeched briefly with the electronic stress of blanket jamming, and then went silent.
Come on, Carda snapped, drawing his blaster and spinning back toward the exit.
At the far end of the tunnel, he could see shapes moving. Lifting his blaster, he fired toward them. The violent thunderclap of a sonic boom shattered the air around him, slamming hard against his head and nearly toppling him to the ground. He glanced up, ears ringing, just as two slower-moving TIE fighters swooped past overhead, laying down a spitting pattern of laser fire at the mouth of the exit tunnel. The paving erupted into steaming blocks of half-molten ceramic under the assault, blocking any chance of quick escape in that direction. Carda snapped off a reflexive, if meaningless, shot toward the TIE fighters. And he was just beginning to shift his aim back toward the figures in the tunnel when a dozen stormtroopers suddenly leaped into view at the upper rim of the landing pit, sliding down drop lines to the ground.
Down, he snapped at Mara.
His voice hardly audible to his paralyzed sense of hearing. He dived for the ground, hitting awkwardly on his left arm, and bringing his blaster to bear on the nearest stormtrooper. He fired, missing by half a meter. And he was just noticing the curious fact that the Imperials weren't returning fire when the blaster was deftly plucked from his hand. He rolled half over, looking up at Mara with stunned disbelief.
What?
She was standing over him, her face so pinched with emotion he could hardly recognize it, her lips moving with words he couldn't hear. But he didn't really need any explanation. Strangely, he felt no anger at her, not for concealing her Imperial past from him all this time,
nor for now returning to her origins. Only chagrin that he'd been fooled so easily and so thoroughly, and a strange regret that he had lost such a skilled associate. The stormtroopers hauled him to his feet and moved him roughly toward a dropship that was settling onto the paving beside the etherway. And as he stumbled toward it, a stray thought occurred to him. He was betrayed and captured and probably facing death. But at least he now had a partial answer to the mystery of why Mara wanted to kill Luke Skywalker. Mara glared at the Grand Admiral, her hands curled into fists, her body trembling with rage.
8 days, Thrawn,
she snarled, her voice echoing oddly through the background noises of the Chimera's vast shuttle bay.
You said 8 days. You promised me 8 days.
Thrawn gazed back with a polite calmness that made her long to burn him down where he stood.
I changed my mind, he said coolly. It occurred to me that Carda might not only refuse to divulge the Katana fleet's location, but might even abandon you here for suggesting that he make such a deal with us.
The gates of hell you did, Mara snapped back. You planned to use me like this right from the start.
And it got us what we wanted, the red-eyed freak said smoothly. That's all that matters.
Deep within Mara, something snapped. Ignoring the armed stormtroopers standing just behind her, she threw herself at Thrawn, fingers hooking like a hunting bird's talons for his throat, and came to an abrupt, bone-wrenching stop as Thrawn's Nogri bodyguard sidled in from 2 meters away, threw his arm across her neck and shoulder, and spun her around and halfway to the deck. She grabbed at the iron-hard arm across her throat, simultaneously throwing her right elbow back toward his torso. But the blow missed, and even as she shifted to a two-handed grip on his arm, white spots began to flicker in her vision. His forearm was pressing solidly against her carotid artery, threatening her with unconsciousness. There wasn't anything to be gained by blacking out. She relaxed her struggle, felt the pressure ease. Thrawn was still standing there, regarding her with amusement.
That was very unprofessional of you, Emperor's Hand, he chided.
Mara glared at him and lashed out again, this time with the force. Thrawn frowned slightly, fingers moving across his neck as if trying to brush away an intangible cobweb. Mara leaned into her tenuous grip on his throat, and he brushed again at his neck before understanding came.
All right, that's enough, he said,
his voice noticeably altered, his tone starting to get angry.
Stop it, or Rook will have to hurt you.
Mara ignored the order, digging in as hard as she could. Thrawn gazed unblinkingly back at her, his throat muscles moving as he fought against the grip. Mara clenched her teeth, waiting for the order or hand movement that would signal permission for the Nogri to choke her, or for the stormtroopers to burn her down. But Thrawn remained silent and unmoving. And a minute later, gasping for breath, Mara had to concede defeat.
I trust you've learned the limits of your small powers, Thrawn said coldly, fingering his throat.
But at least he didn't sound amused anymore.
A little trick the Emperor taught you?
He taught me a great many tricks,
Mara bit out, ignoring the throbbing in her temples. How to deal with traitors was one of them. Thrawn's glowing eyes glittered.
Have a care, Jade, he said softly. I rule the Empire now, not some long-dead Emperor, certainly not you. The only treason is defiance of my orders. I'm willing to let you come back to your rightful place in the Empire, as first officer, perhaps, of one of the Katana dreadnoughts. But any further outbursts like this one
and that offer will be summarily withdrawn.
And then you'll kill me, I suppose, Mara growled.
My empire isn't in the habit of wasting valuable resources, the other countered. You'd be given instead to Master Kabaoth as a little bonus gift, and I suspect you would soon wish I'd had you executed.
Mara stared at him, an involuntary shiver running up her back. Who is Kabaoth?
Jorus Kabaoth is a mad Jedi Master, Thrawn told her darkly. He's consented to help our war effort in exchange for Jedi to mold into whatever twisted image he chooses. Your friend Skywalker has already walked into his web. His sister, Organa Solo, we hope to deliver soon.
His face hardened.
I would genuinely hate for you to have to join them.
Mara took a deep breath. I understand, she said, forcing out the words. You've made your point. It won't happen again.
He eyed her a moment, then nodded. Apology accepted, he said. Release her, Ruch. Now, do I take it you wish to rejoin the Empire?
The Nogri let go of her neck, reluctantly, Mara thought, and took a short step away. What about the rest of Karda's people? She asked.
As we agreed, they're free to go about their business. I've already cancelled all Imperial search and detention orders concerning them, and Captain Pelion is at this moment calling off the bounty hunters.
And Karda himself?
Thrawn studied her face. He'll remain aboard until he tells me where the Katana fleet is. If he does so with a minimum of wasted time and effort on our part, he'll receive the $3 million in compensation, which you and I agreed on at Endor. If not, there may not be much left of him to pay compensation to.
Mara felt her lip twitch. He wasn't bluffing, either. She'd seen what a full-bore Imperial interrogation could do.
May I talk to him? She asked.
Why?
I might be able to persuade him to cooperate.
Thrawn smiled slightly.
Or could at least assure him that you did not, in fact, betray him.
He'll still be locked in your detention block, Mara reminded him, forcing her voice to stay calm. There's no reason for him not to know the truth.
Thrawn lifted his eyebrows. On the contrary, he said, a sense of utter abandonment is one of the more useful psychological tools available to us. A few days with only thoughts of that sort to relieve the monotony may convince him to cooperate without harsher treatment.
Thrawn, Mara broke off, strangling back the sudden flash of anger.
That's better, the Grand Admiral approved. His eyes steady on her face. Especially considering that the alternative is for me to turn him directly over to an interrogator droid. Is that what you want?
No, Admiral, she said, feeling herself slump a little.
Karda helped me when I had nowhere else to go.
I understand your feelings, Thrawn said, his face hardening again.
This book is continued at this point on the other side of this cassette. Please reverse or turn the cassette over now.